This episode is brought to you by Real Ball. Real Ball is a small rubber soccer ball that's a little heavier than a normal soccer ball, and it has a fair bit of bounce. And it's used heavily by some pro teams in Brazil, and it's no wonder. Brazilians are known for their phenomenal touch and what they can do with the ball. And the key is, when you train with a Real Ball and then go back to a normal soccer ball, you'll find that you have better touch and more control. And those are really key for soccer players at any level. Another side bonus is, because of the material, it won't get scratched up on the sidewalk or urban areas, so it's great to carry around the city. You can get a discount at our link in the show notes.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Soccer Stories. It's your host, Jack Murray, and I'm here alongside my dad, Andrew. And today we are very excited to be interviewing a former professional soccer player, Phoebe Trautman. Phoebe has won many collective and individual accolades. She's been inducted into multiple sports halls of fame, and she's also the author of Never Quit on a Bad Day, Inspiring Stories of Resilience. So we're super excited to have you. So how are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. It was great. It's great connecting with you guys. And so I'm always excited to chat and make new friendships and see how we can help inspire people.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it too. So our first question for you is, how did you fall in love with the beautiful game?
Oh, that's a great question. So I actually started playing soccer when I was about 4 or 5, mostly because my older brother played. So my brother is 4 years older, and I was the little sister that had to go to all his games. And I think just watching it and being on the sideline, I was like, hey, I want to play too. I can do this. And so my parents signed me up, and I started off playing on an all-boys team. I was the only person of color, little girl on all-boys team. And that's how I started. I fell in love with just the competitive side of it, being able to work together. And it just from there, it's continued right through.
Yeah, I can even feel your passion just from talking about it. And that kind of sounds like my brother a little bit too, because he's younger than me. He's 7, and he always comes to my games. And he's going to be playing at the same club as me very soon in Portugal as well. It is really cool. And I guess that would have been, what was the experience like of being playing on an all boys team?
It's interesting because
sorry, I was just going to say, because this is probably back when soccer wasn't even that popular in a sport, right? In
Canada. This is a while ago. I don't want to date myself, but yeah, it definitely is a few years ago. So I don't know if my parents it was supposed to be co-ed, and then it ended up just there weren't any other girls playing at the time or whatnot. But it was fun. I think everyone just accepted me a play. You know, at that young age, boys and girls just, they mix well, I feel. Yeah. And I was really into it. So I was probably myself and a couple other players that I remember, we were the ones who were like, yes, we love this game, and like scoring goals and all into it. So I think in that way, it was fine, because it wasn't like I was doing other things. I was really focused on playing. So they were great. We had a fun time. And plus, having an older brother, having some older boy cousins, I was used to playing with boys. And so it didn't really faze me. In some ways, I think it helped me develop a certain level of toughness. When you have the older brother and you're playing with, which I'm sure your younger brother can relate to, you want to beat them. And so you do everything you can to really challenge them. And in that, it helps you develop as a player, it helps you develop your toughness, and even learning how to lose. Because oftentimes when they're older, they want to win too. And they're not taking any, they're not really being soft on you, if you will. So it helped me grow as a player for sure.
Exactly. When did you know that you were good? Like that you knew that you were like, you had some talent there that was standout?
Yeah, I don't even know if I really knew. I guess as you got older, if you will, I think in the younger days, it was just playing and wanting to win, right? So you do whatever you can to win, and scoring goals was fun, and I enjoyed that piece of it. So I definitely probably say as I got older and fell in love more with the game of it all, like we grew up, my parents originally from Barbados, so they didn't play soccer. So we grew up, my dad would go to the library, rent videos of Pelé playing, and we would watch it. And that's how I really like just developed skill and loved it. So I'm still a huge Brazil fan, and just fell in love with that way. And so as I started watching and then playing on more teams and more competitive and seeing the talent out there, that's when it also hit me that I wanted to practice more. And oftentimes we were in the backyard with my dad or my older brother just playing, or by myself in the garage, just doing skill work off the garage wall a lot of times too.
Okay, cool. And then I'm also curious, like, what would you feel was like a really pivotal point in from playing like amateur, just playing for fun, and then really deciding that you would want to go pro or take this like sport to another level?
Yeah. So, you know, what's interesting is I've been like reflecting back on a career with soccer. And so one of the like most pivotal points was when I didn't make a team, if you will, because I was playing when I was always a player that was highlight and did well. And then I went for this other team, if you will, and I didn't make it. I didn't even make it past the first round. I'm naturally more of a goal scorer, like to play up front. And I was playing defense. The coach was like, no, I think you're going to be a defender. And I just did not adapt well to that at all. So anyways, I didn't even make it past that first round and I was devastated. I still can picture myself and remember myself being on the couch, just crying and crying and crying. And it was in that moment too, with having some conversations with my parents, because it was gut wrenching. And then even after the first round, a player who was on my team, who most from the general consensus probably wouldn't have said was a strong player, and that player made the team. And so that was like the extra like sucker punch blow where I was like, oh my gosh. And you go through all these emotions and kind of one of those things. My parents are like, okay, what do you want to do about it? What's done is done. Now you have a choice. So do you want to still play? Do you not want to play? And it was that kind of pivotal moment where it was like, yes, I want to play. And I want to make sure I'm so good that there's not going to be a question of me not making a team. Then it was that kind of accountability where you look in the mirror and you're, well, what can I do? How can I get better? How can I, in that moment, I was playing a different position. So if that happens again, how do I mentally get over that and still do the best I can do? How can I be better with my skills in terms of being more fit, more ball work, better control, all that stuff? And then I just really dug deep into it and just made sure going forward, there'd be no question.
Nice. So you turned the adversity into a real positive.
I did. And again, this is all like when you look back over it and realize right. That was such a huge moment, because I had two choices. I could have been like, this is totally unfair. I'm done. This is ridiculous. And pack it all in. And that would have been one path on my journey of life, if you will. And then in this case, it was more of a, like, oh, I love this sport. I love playing. I want to contribute to my team. I want to be an impact player. What can I do? And then it led me in such a different direction where I'm just so grateful that I continued on in even though I was devastated and gut wrenched and red eyes from crying all the time.
Yeah. A bit like a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm curious, how old were you at that point?
I was in junior high, so I was either grade 8, grade 9, or grade 10. I don't actually remember. So anywhere between 13 and 15, which again, just a few short years ago, not really, it was a long time ago. So I don't actually remember what age I was in, but somewhere around there.
And would that have been about the time where you got more into tactical and becoming interested in the tactical game? Because I think for a lot of people, there's a transition at a certain point where you start taking it more seriously, you start starting different tactics, watching it a little bit differently. And some people just play for fun and never get that. And there's a certain point where I think players start to separate. When did you cover the more tactical side?
Interestingly enough, that probably came through university. We really didn't, growing up here, a lot of our coaches were parents, just parents who were kind enough to be like, we need someone to coach. And they're like, sure, I'll do it. Didn't necessarily have a background in soccer. Super grateful that they stepped up, because we could have not had a coach and then we wouldn't have had a team. So there wasn't a lot of tactical play in that way, if you will, like from coaches teaching us. As I mentioned, lots of video footage of watching Pelé play and watching Brazil. In that way, you get a sense for a game, but I wouldn't say I necessarily studied the game until university. And that was through the coach there, and then continuing on in terms of my career, having coaches who were doing more sessions where it's about tactical, what system are we going to play? How are we going to adjust to this, etc. Definitely came on later in life. I love to see how the game has shifted in terms of just the level of coaching, the level of information that's out there that's accessible to young athletes, and just watching them play now. I went out to one of my good friends who we grew up playing together, her son playing. This was a couple months ago, and they're under 13. And I was just blown away by the level of skill and just understanding of the game that they had, that we didn't have that until university. Like for me, in my experience, like they are just hands down so far ahead in terms of the game of soccer. It's really cool to see.
Yeah. Like for me, and I'm trying to learn more and more about the tactical side so I can be the best player. It's amazing because even if I go on Instagram, there are accounts that I follow that will give like these like little mindset advice, like mindset or tactical advice. Right. And it's a lot more open than I think even 10 years ago, where it would have been. It's like so much more it's so much easier to find the right information.
Absolutely. It's accessible. And I think that's beautiful that you're doing that, because you're just going to grow so much more as a player. And so it's neat that there's so much information available at your fingertips. And I love what you brought up, though, the mindset piece of it, because it is such a, you need the tactical side. That being said, if the mental game isn't there, you can have the best tactics in the world, but it won't come together as far as you can when you have the mental piece. You have control of your mind in terms of what you're thinking and how you visualize the game and what you're going out to do, and sometimes even maintaining that composure when you're playing as well as the tactical side, which is equally important too.
Yeah, I feel like all the best players, they have the base of their technical side and how well they're able to pass ball. Because obviously, if you're going to play at a high level, you need to be able to technically play. But there's also the tactical side. And then there's also the mental side. I think the best players have all those three like components down really well. But you also mentioned that, like, talking about the tactics and what kind of system you played. So for you, what like system or tactics did you like to play in the most?
So in terms of structure, if you will?
Yeah, like structure, style of play.
Yeah, so I played up front. I'm definitely head down, where this is the net, let me go put the ball in the back of the net type of player. Yeah. So I like systems where it allows a lot of freedom in terms of that flexibility playing. In university, we had a front sweep position behind the two attacking players, which I loved, because then we had that rotating flexibility, if you will. So those are always my favorite, when you have someone that you can play off of. I've been extremely fortunate to play with some incredible talented players, and so having that support beside you, in front of you as you're rotating, moving around, I've always found that I've enjoyed the most in terms of just being able to thrive and do well with it, because I'm definitely more of a direct, again, let's go, where's the goal, let's put it in the back of the net kind of player.
Well, you want to get involved in the play, right? Like some strikers, they get isolated up there, particularly if their team's not very good and they're not playing like that, but you're able to you like getting more involved with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I want to contribute. So it's like, if I need to come back a little bit to get it, to go forward, to lay it out, I'm prepared to do that because I want to be involved. I find the games where, you know, as later in life, sometimes we've changed systems. It's like one lone person up front. I'm like, because it depends. Can we get the ball up there? And that's been, as the game evolves and you just realize you're what you enjoy the most in terms of just playing and again, contributing. That's my ultimate goal, is I want to contribute to the overall success of my team.
So what was the step up to university like?
It was a step up, let's say that. Like, because I went from having parent coaches for the most part. And then my last year, that would be my first year of university. I ended up joining another team where we had a coach who was like, knew the game of soccer and just knew it through and through. So definitely grateful to him. So the step from like playing kind of club to university was a big jump for me, because I didn't really know what to expect. My fitness was not where it needed to be at all going into university, just because I didn't really know what to expect. So I was fit, but was I university fit? No, not at all. And so it was a huge transition in the beginning. But I loved it, because in that competitive environment, you have a choice. Right? Do you step up and do what you need to do, or do you just stay there? And I definitely stepped up because I wanted to play. And so I wanted to prove myself in the opportunities. And so when I would get opportunities to play, I made sure, again, I'm going to be an impact player, whether it's coming off the bench, whether it's starting. And so I loved that. Like, I loved being able to, especially my first year being a rookie, I loved coming off the bench and making an impact. That was like my thing, right? So I grabbed onto that. If that was the role, again, they had some very talented upfront players going in as a rookie. However, I knew that when I got that chance, I was going to make an impact, which I didn't, and had a great first season. And then it continued on through there.
Nice. So how did you, you're going through university, you're playing soccer. Did you even think there was a path to play soccer afterwards, and how did that happen?
Yeah, so I didn't really, again, this is, we're looking at 20 plus years ago. It was definitely a very different experience back then. I did know I wanted to go away and play a soccer. So I wanted to just have that experience of being somewhere else, because I did live at home when I was going to university. And so I had spoken to my university coach about it. She had a connection to a club down in Colorado. And so she's like, if you want to play, there's this opportunity to play in this league. It's called the W League. And there's a team down in Colorado and they're looking for a striker. And I was like, okay, let's let me find out more. And so had a conversation. And then I was really excited about it, especially coming off like a great season and great university career, if you will, as a whole. I was excited to have that next step, if you will, and to, again, continue to grow as a player. And so I went down to Colorado to play a season there. Loved it. It was so much fun just being away and playing soccer and having that experience. And then I decided after the first season, I had the opportunity to go back. However, we were in the same league as the Vancouver team. And playing soccer was my youth career, playing against a lot of really talented players that were based here in Vancouver. I wanted that experience now to have them as teammates. And so I was excited about the opportunity to come home and actually play for Vancouver. And Vancouver had a very strong team. And I was just looking forward to, you go from playing against players for so long to now they're your teammate and you get that experience. And so then I decided to play for Vancouver and played 5 or 6 seasons with the Vancouver team.
Okay, that's cool. And just on your point about being able to play, like, I remember when I was like started for the provincial team, it was super cool to see because I played against these really good players and then to get the opportunity to play alongside them. And unfortunately, we didn't get to like a tournament because of like COVID, but it was definitely cool to play and do chemistry with and get more chemistry with them. But you also were an MVP, right? So tell us about that.
Yeah. So again, I've been really fortunate. I've had MVPs at all levels that I've played at, if you will. So in university, I was awarded NAIA Player of the Year, which was just an amazing honor to have that for the entire league. We ended up winning that season as well. So we won the national championship, and to be able to do that and could again contribute to the team was amazing. So grateful for that. I also was awarded Athlete of the Year for my university in that year as well. And so it's such an honor to be, I feel like you're doing a great job in the sense of contributing, but then also when other people see that contribution and want to recognize it, it means a lot. It really does mean a lot. I was W League Player of the Year as well when I was playing for the Vancouver team. And so it's just a great honor to be able to, again, contribute and help the overall success of a team. Soccer is such a team sport.
Yeah.
And so it's like you want to create success with your teammates. And that's the ultimate goal. Like I personally, for me, it's all about let's win a championship, right? That for me is like a highlight. And if I can also be recognized for helping to make that happen or helping to have a successful season, it's like icing on the cake, if you will.
Yeah. Like the cherry on top.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a huge honor. I remember for even both, like when I got the call for NAIA Player of the Year and W League Player of the Year, I remember being like, wait, what? I thought it was a joke. I was like, really? And it was huge, but I didn't really expect it. Again, when you're playing with so many talented players, it's just, but wait, they could have gone to this person and this person. There's so many great people. And to have that honor is just, yeah, it means so much. It really did mean a lot. Yeah. And does mean a lot still to this day.
And I'd love to hear more about like the W League. So talk us more about that and your experience. How many seasons did you play there? Because you mentioned you went to Colorado, you spent quite a few seasons in Vancouver.
I did. Yeah. So I spent one season in Colorado and then it's either 5 or 6 with Vancouver that I played. And so the W League back then was the highest league, if you will, in terms of soccer in North America at that time. I shouldn't even say North America because I believe it was just Canada and the United States. So that was the women's league that was available to play in. And I loved it. We just actually had a reunion on the weekend and it was neat again to just see some of my teammates and to connect. And I was like saying like, you share such a special bond with your teammates that it doesn't even matter how much time has passed. When you get together, you're remembering this and, oh, remember when that happened and this happened. And it was just, it's so heartwarming. And to have that opportunity and stuff that you'll cherish for your life. You really will cherish the opportunity of your playing and the career that you've created and to have those lifelong bonds. And so W League was a great experience. Again, I learned a lot. You're going again from a jump from university soccer to at the time what they'd considered professional as it was the highest league at that time. And so there's that other jump in terms of making sure you're fit, you're faster, you go in stronger, you're strong as a player. And so it was a fun jump going from made sure this time that I was fit because I had learned a lot over those 4 years at university. So made sure that I was ready for it. And I loved it. I grew a lot as a player and again, learned so much from my teammates and coaches.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And I'm also curious, you've talked a bit about like your game style, but what do you think was like the biggest X factor you had to be able to like win those championships collectively, but also get those like MVP awards?
So I would say definitely being a tough player. Like I'm going to go in tough. I am going to make sure I get out of this tackle successfully. Like it's going to be a battle and I'm prepared for it. And I do definitely leave it all on the field, though. It's not playing tough is a mentality, I think, that you bring to the field and like a do whatever it takes to get the ball in the back of the net. Right. So lots of body contact. And say my players were, it's funny, I was with some friends from SFU, from university, and we were watching a game. One of my teammates is like, oh, there's no way Phoebe Trautman would have not flattened someone to get that ball in the back of the net, like when a play happened. And it was my style. Like I was very determined to get the ball in the back of the net, and whether it's going to bounce off a kneecap and may not be the best finish or clinical finish where, you know, I'm slotting it past the keeper on a breakaway, whatever it takes, that kind of had that mentality. I still do when I play. It's really a very committed, dedicated, focused, let's do this. And I want to be the best that I can be in my position.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. And you say you still play, right?
I do still play. It's so interesting because I have this shoulder injury, which, believe it or not, is so painful. So right now I'm not actually playing. I'm recovering from it. And I did try and play. I was like, you know what? I can do it. Who can play with one arm? And so I was literally running like with this arm over my chest because when I swing, it hurts. And then I went in for one shoulder to shoulder tuck. And I was like, and then I was like, how do we be fine? Keep going. But you don't realize how much like having your other arm in terms of like when you're crossing a ball and just how much the mechanics of your body mechanics, you need your arms to play soccer. So it was one game and right now I'm off on just figuring this out and what it is, how to get back out on the field, because I definitely do miss playing.
Yeah.
So I was wondering about hiring. At some point, you don't play in the league anymore. Oftentimes, that's a difficult decision for players. Sometimes it's other factors. How do you decide to stop playing professionally?
Yeah, so great question. It's such a personal decision for everyone. As you said, there's so many different factors that play into when do you decide it's time. For me, I'm extremely fortunate that I've had a great career from an injury standpoint. I've been very fortunate. Like the longest time I've been off was actually last season with a knee injury, and that was 4 months. But up until then, I had hamstring pulls and ankle sprains and all that, but you just kind of, the back of the day, tape it up and play and you're fine. You got to play through a lot of that stuff. So I hadn't had to take a lot of breaks. And so when I decided to retire from the Vancouver Whitecaps, it really was a decision. And I always say this, and I talk about this a bit in the book. It's like when you're going to quit something, it's transition to something else, right? And the whole premise behind never quit on a bad day is if you're going to quit something, quit on a good day. Right? Go. Because a lot of times we quit things when we're in that negative space. We're frustrated, we're upset, we don't think things are fair, et cetera, et cetera. And then that's when we quit. And so I talk about when I chose to retire, it wasn't on a bad day. It wasn't a bad season or bad game. It really was a point in my life where we had actually just finished a game. It was preseason, well, pre-preseason, if you will. And things went well. We had a new coach coming in, gave some great positive feedback. And I just was on my way home from the game, sitting there and thinking about it. And I realized like I accomplished a lot of what I wanted to accomplish in my career, if you will, with the Vancouver team and the W League as a whole. And it was starting off in business. And I was at that point where I was like, I had missed a lot of family events over the year, which again, it was my choice. That was my priority right then was soccer and road trips. And so I had to miss a lot of things. And I just realized I was at a point in my life where I wanted to be there and to be able to be there for friends and family. There was events. I wanted to focus on my business, which I knew was going to take a lot of time and focus because I'm going in a whole different new career path. And I knew I wasn't going to stop playing soccer. I was just going to change how I was playing. You go from practicing 4 to 5 times a week with games on the weekend. Sometimes you're on the road to I'm going to still play, but I'm just going to play in a different way. I'm going to play twice a week. So it's still there. I still have that competitive outlet. I still have the love for the game. It's just now it's going to be in a shift of focus. And I really felt a sense of peace. I really was okay with it. And I just thought, you know what? I've had an incredible career in terms of soccer at the highest level, as if you will, in terms of what was available at that time. And I'm excited for the next chapter, if you will, of my life. And so I'm going to take everything that I've learned from my career as an athlete over into this world. And I'm excited for the next thing. As I said, I'm transitioning forward to something new that was I was excited about. And I really did feel peace. I just felt really calm when I made that decision. I was like, this is where it's at, and I'm excited for the next chapter.
Yeah, I'm glad that you felt peace and it wasn't, and like you're very happy with the decision. But I'm also curious, like, what do you think was like one of the main things that you took away from like your time playing at the highest level in soccer into like your life now, which, and like, just your daily life? What do you think was one of the biggest things you took away from that whole experience?
Yeah, so there's so many, I say this, there's so many life lessons that we learn as athletes that helps in terms of just life in general. Obviously, you have teamwork, right? Working together with other people, different personalities. How do you navigate that? You have your own determination, your commitment. I would say focus for sure is a big piece. Mm-hmm. There's so many different skills that I learned that I had to push through. And I think a big one was, what can you control? At the end of the day, like having to really learn and accept, what can I control? I can control myself. As an athlete, I can show up early for sessions. I can train hard. I can be the best that I can be. That is in my control. Whether or not I get the playing time that I want, that I think I deserve, that's yes and no. I can be the best player at the end of the day, but the coach makes that decision. So focusing really on what you can control and bringing that into the business world in terms of what can I control? I can control my activity in terms of my business. I can control, you know, being on focus on my business. There are certain things, that elements that I have control of, and focusing on those and developing those has been huge. And again, that resilience, right? Being, having bumps and things that didn't go the way you wanted to, and pushing through and overcoming them.
Yeah,
so I gave you way more than one. I realized that was a whole like 5, 6, 7. Yeah, there's just so many things. There's time management. I always say that like athletes have incredible time management, because if you're a student athlete, you got to balance your career in terms of your athlete, soccer being at practice, time, all that. And then you also have your schoolwork too. Yeah, there's just so many. I'm such a big believer in the skills that you learn as an athlete and how it just helps you in life.
This episode is brought to you by BlazePod. BlazePod is amazing tech that is great not just for soccer players, but for any type of athlete. It works by improving your quickness with a series of LED lights that can be programmed in an app. And it's a heck of a lot of fun. It's been used by pro footballers like Luka Modric and Vinicius Jr. at Real Madrid. And here's why I like it. It makes you quicker. And quickness is super important in soccer. I think that most coaches would agree that the difference between a player playing at the level that they are and the level that they want to get to, which is maybe playing a level up or playing in a more competitive division, is it all comes down to speed of play. And players tend to play to the top player on their team, but not to the next level. So that's why I think BlazePod is really important to look at. If you or your kid wants to go pro, you can get a 10% discount using my code in the show notes.
I think it's amazing. And like on one of your points about dealing with different personalities, it's really, really true, because like on a team, you need to work together. And like definitely I think it's just such a valuable skill to learn how to work with teammates from different personnel that are different personalities than you. And like I personally am very interested in psychology. And we even talked about it when we first met, that psychology and MBTI. And it's just a really valuable skill to learn how to do those, deal with different personalities. And also all the other things you mentioned, because they're also very true.
Thank you. Thank you. What would you say, like in your terms of your career right now, what would you say is the biggest thing that you've been able to take from it that's helping you in your life?
I think that's really a tough question. And there, like you said, there's so many that you could choose from, but I think definitely learning how to move past the setbacks. Cause like for me, I've had a couple injuries, and it's really important to learn how you can recover from that and then continue to play at your best. And even like for me, playing from playing in Canada to now coming to Portugal, it's a big adjustment, especially like you're here for a couple days, you go on trial at a club, and I didn't really speak the best Portuguese at the time. So it's there's so many things, but definitely learning how to roll with the punches and continue to do your best, even like in face of adversity. Because I'm sure you've definitely like you felt that too, being able to still put your best foot forward, whether or not you're a super sub or you're the starting player.
Absolutely. You have to. And it takes a mental adjustment. It takes a mental strength, if you will, to really, and that's one of the things I always talk about to younger players, be an impact player, whether you are a starter or you're coming off the bench. Like coming off the bench, you can completely change the trajectory of that game. If you have that mindset of like, when I come on, you're going to notice that a change was made for the best. And that takes a lot of mental strength as you develop into being a starter. How can you be the best in whatever time you get, whether it's 5 minutes, make it the best 5 minutes you can give, or it's a full 90 minutes and overtime, give it all you have. And so I think that just definitely takes a lot of mental strength. And you're right, overcoming those setbacks, right? Life is full of setbacks. Yeah. On the soccer field, outside of the soccer field, how do you respond to that? It's the important thing. And that's why I talk about that control, like in terms of like setbacks are going to happen. You can only choose how you respond to it.
Yeah. And like, for me, I have something called like a snapback routine. So when something, and this is for life in general, but it also can be really good for sports to learn how to respond, because things aren't always super sunny. They're going to be like really rough days. And it's about how learning. A secret to life, I think, is like learning how to keep moving forward in like face of adversity. So something that I believe is really important is like perspective. And I think you already touched on it, because I believe there are like 8 million people in the world, and each of them are having different days. It's just solely based on their mindset and perspective. And like that perspective of being a sub, you can have the perspective of either, I'm not a starting player, this is awful, or I'm going to make a huge impact when they come on.
Absolutely. And so I tell people, like, whatever you have, you do the best that you can do. And it will, like, it will go a long way. It will go a long way for yourself, like, in just in terms of teaching you to prosper in whatever you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super important.
So in terms of like mindset, obviously you've got a good mindset that was bolstered probably by good coaches and decisions along the way. And that's led into a book. So you have a book. Can you tell us about like, how did you decide to bring that book into existence, and what's it about?
Yeah, absolutely. So the name of the book is Never Quit on a Bad Day, Inspiring Stories of Resilience. And it's interesting how, as we've talked about, life throws you different paths and you just being open to it. And so I was actually with some friends of mine. They're very successful in an online business. And we were just chatting about what's next. And I had shared that it's been on my heart for several years to create something to help and inspire and encourage. And I said, I didn't really know what it was going to be, but I just knew that I wanted it to impact people in a positive way. And they were the ones, they're like, why don't you write a book? And I was like, I don't know if I really want to write a book. That was literally my response. And I kind of laughed, because over the years I've had a few people like, you should write a book. And I was like, I'm good, thank you. And so here's the key though, is like just being open. And so they shared with me, because I had talked to them about why I had worked so hard, kind of reached the top rank in my network marketing company, and was just really because I wanted people to see that someone else could do it. You could be a woman, you could be a person of color, you can be single, like all these things, and you can do it too. And they said, that's the same reason I should write a book, for all the people that it will inspire and help. And so when they said it like that, then I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe, I said. However, if I write a book, it has to do two things. Number one, it has to help and inspire people. And number two, I have to feel passionate to like what the book is about. I really have to feel passionate about it. And the month before, I had been inducted into the Coquitlam Sports Hall of Fame. And in that, we had a little interview process. And the interviewer had asked me, what is sport giving me? And I shared some of those life skills that we've already talked about. And I shared, though, you know, I've had incredible highs, like winning NAIA championship and like the longest game in history. Like it was basically almost the equivalent of 2 soccer games, like that moment, winning W League championships, under 19 championships, women's championships, master champ. Like I've had incredible, awesome moments with my teammates. And then obviously the individual accolades as well. Like it's been awesome. That being said, the only reason I've been able to have those is because of all the tough stuff, right? Losing in the NAIA championship final in my first year, and second year, we lost again. Third, didn't even make the play. Like, well, getting cut from the team, as we talked about, like getting a red card, which 100% was my own fault. Just again, you can focus on what you control. That moment, I did not control well. And so all these things that were really like challenge, frustrating, disappointments, but pushing through those is the only reason I was able to have those highs, right? And so in that, when I was thinking about the theme of the book, that's what I realized. I was like, I want to share more of the tough stuff, because I truly believe when people start learning behind the scenes, the story behind the story, then they're going to know, even though they may not face the exact same challenge as someone else, there will be parallels, right? And then if you can learn how that person moved through it and how they did navigate through it and why they now that can help other people. And so that's when I really got excited about it, because I was like, you know what? That's what I want to write a book about. I want to write a book that's going to share some of those tough things, because I think people sometimes just see like the championship, but they're not realizing all the other stuff that took to get right. And I decided on the general concept of the book. And then I had heard the saying, never quit on a bad day, years ago. Many years ago. And I was like, you know what? That would be a great name for a book. Never quit on a bad day. Because if people understand that philosophy, like what that truly means, it'll change people's lives. Right. And, but I was like, oh, I'm sure. When I say I do this thing with God, I call it my open the door, close the door. And so I was like, okay, God, open the door. If never quit on a bad day, if that URL is available, then I know you're saying go for it. If it's not, I put it out there. Sorry, I guess I'm not writing a book. Like literally was my thought, or a different title. Anyhow, so when I got home from my trip, I put it in and it was available. I was shocked because I was like, oh my gosh, no one had, okay, great. And so got the domain, and then I started getting really excited about the book. And because I did all, I wanted to combine my background in athletics and then my kind of background business-wise into something. And then the more I started simmering on thinking of people who I wanted to contribute, I realized it's more than just one book. It's a series of books. And so the first one came out in July and has been getting awesome reviews and feedback, which just means so much because it's ultimately just about helping people and inspiring people to push through. It was fun to learn about publishing a book and all the stuff that came with it. And I'm excited to start the next one in the series and just keep going.
Okay, well, that's really cool. And I personally have read some of it and I really love it. And I love how like it shows, like you mentioned, like those inspiring stories to show, because I also think when you show someone what someone's been through or what's possible, it raises the level that you can go to too. Because I think there's this quote that says, never be limited by other people's limited imaginations. And I feel like when people don't quite understand your mission or things like that, that can often have like a negative impact on you. But when you're able to see these people that have gone through like really tough times, but then come out on the other side of it, it really inspires you and believes, and it helps you raise the level of what's possible for yourself as well. And the other thing I really like about the book too is that it's not just stories, inspiring stories, but you also get, there's this part at the end, it's almost like a workbook too, because you can write, you have these prompts and questions, and you can write down your answers, and it helps you like learn the lesson more concretely too.
Thank you. Yeah, that was really important to me because, again, I didn't want it to just be about the stories, because you're going to find inspiration in the stories. Absolutely. That being said, I truly believe we are so much more resilient than we even know. And sometimes you just forget it. So I wanted to create something to remind the reader, hey, you've been through some stuff. You've come out on the other side. When other stuff happens, you'll be able to make it through. Just you remember some of the thing. And I really wanted, I find a lot of people stop dreaming and stop setting goals, myself included. I can go through phases where I'm just going through the motions versus having something that I'm working towards and have that excitement in terms of going, moving towards it. And so I wanted it to be a book that would inspire people to dream again, to think, yeah, what is something I would love to do in my life, and get them starting to think about that and what it was one thing you can do today to move you closer to your dreams. And that, you know, what's something that you've been through, you know, that you can take that lesson and how you push through it over here. And how can you remember to be grateful even amidst all the challenges? Like, how can you find that gratitude and perspective? Like, so all the chapters have different themes and lessons to really help that reader leave feeling not only inspired, but remember truly in their core who they are and what they're capable of.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm also going to ask you if you can share this. So you mentioned that you're planning on doing more books in the series, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Can you share with us what some ideas you have for the next book in place? Is that something you're able to share at this point?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So one of the things I did do already, so I have Never Quit on a Bad Day, Inspiring Stories of Resilience. That book is out. That's the book with the short stories. And at the end of every chapter, there's the reflections on resilience, one pager. One of the things that I should mention QR code. If you hover over that, that takes the reader to a short video from that contributor where they just share something that was on their heart. And so in my chapter, I talk about an activity that was really transformational for me called A Dream Day. And so I created a workbook that really is a full workbook all about creating your dream day. And so that's available now. It's called Never Quit on a Bad Day, a guided workbook to creating more good days. And so that is for the reader to journal, dream big. There's lots of prompt questions in terms of really creating your dream day. And the reason I encourage people to do that is when you know where you're headed, it helps you when you're going through bumps in the road, when you have those, because at the end of the day, there are going to be those challenging times. And that book on the cover of it, the workbook, is like a lighthouse, because I've used that as a lighthouse for me to help me when I'm having those challenging times to refocus. And so that's also now available. And then I'm working on the next book, which will be, again, more short stories, reflections on resilience. And that one's going to be Accomplished Athlete. So I'm super excited about that one, because it's just, I'm passionate about it. We're talking about sport. And I just want to encourage more younger athletes to push through the tough stuff, because there's so many amazing experiences that you can have as an athlete as you continue to push through and go forward.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And can speak to that. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it was, I don't know if you watched the World Cup, but one of the ladies from Australia was
Hayley Raso. Yeah, and Hayley, like, Raso was, I didn't actually know about her before.
Paralyzed, right?
Yeah, but she was like in a game. And now I find her story super, super inspiring. But this player from Australia, Hayley Raso, she now plays for Real Madrid, which is awesome. But she was playing in, I think, the American League. And she did something with the vertebrae in her back. And she was paralyzed for I don't know how long. I think maybe like, I'm not sure how long, but I know that the doctor told her that they didn't think she'd be able to play like soccer again.
Wow.
And it's like really amazing now to see that she had that huge blip and like setback, but now she's like doing better than where she was before. Cause like Real Madrid is now like a really amazing club for both the men's and the women's side.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Not only that, but the World Cup, the Women's World Cup that was just on was, I mean, Australia went much far. There was a lot more, I would say, parity, I think, between all the teams. And so there were some fantastic games.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. I almost want to put up a sign. If you do not hear from me, I'm busy watching the World Cup. That's just good. For those weeks, it's going to be crazy sleep patterns. I'm getting up at the middle of the night to watch a game. So just bear with me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It was an awful time. So
yeah.
We had games at like 2 a.m. I just set my alarm. I think the final was at 3 a.m. In our time, Pacific time. And I was like, just either going to put an all nighter or get up. But I ended up pulling more of an all nighter. Yeah, I was like getting up at 2:30. I'm like, nah, let's just stay up. Wait.
Yeah, but it was like amazing. And there were definitely, it was so cool to see so many like amazing like players that you hadn't heard of before. Cause I think like every World Cup, there are always players, the new young players that come onto the scene, or even like older players that you just haven't heard of before. And it's amazing to see them, like Hayley Raso or Linda Caicedo. She's amazing.
Oh my gosh. That was so much fun. Like I agree with you. There's players who you know of, you're excited to see again. They're going to come. They're good teams that you just know are going to be like top-notch soccer. And then there are those players who you're like, wait a second, where did you come from? And that's like the talk of World Cup. And you're just like so into, that's why I was getting up at so many like crazy hours. Cause normally it's like, okay, I have my certain teams and I need to set the calendar. I'm on. And then as I started hearing about other players, I was like, oh, well now I need to see this player live. So that I'm like getting up to watch it, but just absolutely incredible. So inspiring. And that's what I mean in terms of like, when you hear and people who are pursuing their passion, they're going after their dreams, they're having these bumps in the road, but they're working through it, it naturally inspires us as people.
Yeah.
And I believe the more we can share that, the more it just inspires us. And then people start pursuing their own passions and their own goals and dreams. And that inspires more people. And it creates this ripple effect, if you will, of just people going after their dreams and goals. And that, I love that. And that's part of, for me, the World Cup is just seeing athletes compete at the top level who have just worked their tail off. They've been through stuff, but they keep showing up and going forward.
Yeah, it was such an amazing like World Cup in general. And yeah, it was awesome.
So what do you think of the women's game in Canada now? How has that changed in the past, I don't know, like 10 years or so?
Yeah, it's exciting to see Canada do so well. It's been fun watching them over the years and just seeing how the players have developed, the coaches that they've brought on, how they've been able to just pull the best out of the players and bring them together. And so I'm excited for the future of Canada in terms of what can happen. Winning an Olympic gold, I still remember that moment with the women's team. And again, that was another get up at, I think that was a wake up at 5 a.m. type of moment, and just being so into it and be like, oh my gosh, they're going to do it. It's happening and seen. And I was with a teammate of mine. We got up super early, and some of the players that are on the women's team now, we had a chance to play with before. And so you're just you're rooting for them with everything in your body. And so just to see them come out with that gold medal was amazing, and just cheering them on. And I think it's inspiring for the younger generation as well to have those role models and see players creating success, and even with the men's team making the World Cup and viewing parties and just everybody getting behind them and having that. And I'm excited for the future because there's so many more opportunities, right? You're in Portugal, the fact that you were able to come back after an injury, go after what you want, and now you're living in Portugal playing soccer. That's inspiring. That's incredible. And there's so many more of those opportunities that are happening for younger athletes that I'm excited about. I'm excited to be able to watch it and cheer and just be a part of it from a cheering perspective, if you will. And I'm excited.
And speaking of the Canadian team, I saw a picture of you online with LeBlanc.
Yeah, so Karina and I go way back.
Who was actually in the, she did the sports.
Okay.
The announcing on Fox Sports for the World Cup for soccer games.
Yeah, she's doing some amazing things. So we've grown up together, so a long, long time. And I remember playing against her, and phenomenal goalie and just incredible human being. The stuff that she's doing to inspire and impact is absolutely incredible. Very proud of her and just love seeing her shine.
Yes, I really enjoyed seeing her coverage, or even the little clips that we got to see of her on Fox Sports. I enjoyed seeing those little clips of her. She was really,
she's a smart cookie.
Yeah, and also I wanted to ask you, what do you think has been the best advice a coach or a teammate has given you?
Best advice, good question. That's a great question. Yeah, I don't even know if it came from a coach though, or necessary. I don't remember, but definitely every time you're given, shine in it. That is something that has stuck with me, and I wish I knew where that came from, because it has been such a huge part of my game, is whatever opportunity that I'm given, go out there and make an impact. So I would say that definitely, having a coach, and I remember my under 19 who just had so much confidence in us as players, his name's Danny, and he just had so much belief, because I do think a big piece of it is when you know your coach, and not every coach is going to believe in you the same way that you need to find it in yourself. Yeah. That being said, when you have coaches who just ultimately believe in you and your abilities as a player, you feel it. It rubs off on you. And so having him in my under 19 year, where it was just you're good, go out there and show it. It was very simple, but he believed in all of us so much that you naturally believe in yourself and you take more risk and then you succeed. And it's he's just cheering you on. You can just feel it. That meant a lot for sure, because that was huge in terms of my career. So I would say that having that for my coach at that age was vital, but really just being the best you can with whatever you get, just making sure you make that impact.
Yeah. And on your point about having those coaches that really believe in you, I'm super lucky that I've also been able to have coaches like that too. But I'm also going to ask you just two more quick questions, and then we're going to go into the funnest part of the interview, which is rapid fire, but some people also say it's the hardest. So the last two questions are, what advice can you give young players starting out? And also the second question is specifically for players that are playing up front.
Okay. So what advice I can give a player? I would say, ask your coach what you can work on. Ask your coach for that feedback. If anything comes up where you're just own it, take accountability and have that conversation and just be like, look, I want to be the best player I can be. What would you say is one thing that I can work on? And if you're going to ask, though, the second piece of that is then take action on it. So if your coach tells you you need to work on, your left foot, let's say your right foot dominant, you haven't been able to master both, then do it. Don't ask and not follow through, because that's even worse, right? So ask for that feedback and then commit to doing that action. And it's just rewarding, right? When you can improve, I think, as human beings, when we see that growth, it's very rewarding. So I would say that for athletes, young athletes, and then for players specifically up front. Oh, take chances. Take chances. Sometimes you got to take chances, right? The way you're going to calculated chances, if you will. So do the work, make sure you're fit, make sure you're strong, make sure you know that net, like the back of your hand that you just, you can feel it and connect with it, and then get the ball in the back of the net, whatever you got to do, put it in there.
Yeah. Except using the hand of God.
Oh yeah. No hands, but if you got, you figure it out, just make sure that goes in there.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. And just a quick, question. As a striker, which foot dominant are you?
I'm naturally right, if you had to, like, from birth, but I made sure I'm both. So you wouldn't necessarily know which foot I am when I play.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. And so like, you were done that in university or before university? You were starting to work on your left foot?
Oh, before. My dad, before. It was like, we're going to make sure you're able to do both. And that has definitely served me well, because people, you wouldn't necessarily know in watching what you're going to do, right?
Yeah, so that has helped tremendously. Yeah, that's so powerful as a player.
Because so for me, when I came to Portugal and I was traveling at one club, I was playing at this one club, and I play here now. But I think like halfway through the season, my teammates asked me, "You're left-footed, right?" Because I was playing on the left side. But actually, I'm right-footed, and he's been teaching me how to use my left since four. So people now actually don't know what foot I am. And my coaches sometimes have also thought, "Are you left-footed?" And it's just definitely a cool thing.
I would say if I could revise my tip for the striker, that actually would be that. So thank you for saying that. I think it's so key. If you can hit with both feet, like again, you're going to have, like, if I was doing a free kick, I'm probably going to take it with my right foot. Yeah. That being said, on the field, I might turn right, hit left. I might shoot with my left. Like it's just whatever you got to do to get the ball in the back of the net. Sometimes it's going to be left and it's going to happen, but that's awesome. I think it's key for young players. Learn how to hit, like how to use both your feet.
Yeah. It's very important. And something that my dad says is he always says half your chances are going to come on your weak foot. So you've got to be able to use it.
Brilliant. So, it's true. It's brilliant. Because the amount of time it takes for a player to, for you to cut it from your left to your right to shoot, by that point, the defender is there and it's done, right? If you can quick release off your left, you're going to keep them on their toes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
No wonder you're so good. Okay.
Thanks. Good job, Dad. You're killing it over there. I love it.
Okay. So now for the rapid fire questions. And this is a really fun part of the interview. It's just fun, quick questions. But some people also say it's the hardest. So I'm going to ask you at the end, was it the hardest or most fun part of the interview? Okay. So what's something that you learned about yourself this past year?
Sorry, say that question again.
What is something that you learned about yourself this past year?
That I actually enjoy writing.
Okay, cool. All right. Nice. Who do you support, a soccer team? Like, I know you mentioned Brazil, but who is your like club?
Brazil. You know what? I'm more of a World Cup soccer focus. Okay. So in terms of like club play, I don't have a particular team that I would say. So.
All right. Okay. Now, Adidas, Nike, Under Armour, or Puma?
Ooh, Nike.
Nike. Okay. What is one superpower you'd like to have?
Superpower? I wish I could sing. That'd be so cool. I don't know if that's a superpower. Oh, you mean like flying? Is that super?
Yeah,
I mean
like that.
But if you could fly and sing, man, then you would be unstoppable.
I know. Yeah, I'd say fly.
Okay, flying. Very cool. What are you currently reading?
I'm reading a book by John Maxwell, 16 Laws of Communication.
Okay, cool.
I think it's 16. Maybe 16, but it's Communication, John Maxwell.
Okay, cool. Now, this is a crazy one. If you had a choice, would you like to explore the oceans, go to outer space, or visit 50 different countries?
50 different countries.
Okay, that's what I would do too. What is your most used emoji?
Heart.
Heart? But what color? Red?
Red.
Red. Okay. Now, this is the last round of our question, and one last question after. What are three words to define you?
Joy.
Okay.
Determination. Passion.
Joy, determination, passion. All right. Those are, I really like those words. For some reason, I feel like that's a really good combination. I don't know why. I think that those are great words, like logically, but I just feel like those are really great words. Okay. And then the last question, which is not really a rapid fire question. What are your goals for the future?
Ooh, a lot. I'd say in terms of short-term goal would be getting the next book out in 2024 and just continuing to help and inspire and impact people in a positive way.
Okay, awesome. And long-term?
Long-term, build the brand, never quit on a bad day, build that brand. So that is a saying that people know and hear. I'm amazed at how many people have never heard of that saying before. As I said, I didn't come up with it. It's not anything new. So really getting that out there so that people understand what that truly means and that they're living that never quit on a bad day mentality. So that I'm very excited about.
I never knew about that phrase until I met you.
So that's why we got to get it out there. We got to get it out there so more people understand it and live it.
All right. Perfect. Thank you, Phoebe, so much for coming on. I really enjoyed chatting with you and it was a great interview. And and good luck with all of your future goals.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you both for having me. I love what you guys are doing and just the impact that you're having on other people is incredible. And I'm excited for you with your playing career. I'm just keep rocking it on the field. Keep rocking it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And like I said, thank you again so much for coming on. I think it was a fantastic interview. Bye.
All right. Thanks.